I've had the pleasure of having a brilliant discussion with Samantha Ming and Adeshola Akanji, who both work at Barts London, one of the largest NHS trusts in the country. This conversation is about how they are using their intersectionalities as Black women living with disabilities to really self-advocate, advocate for others, but just give us some really honest and candid insights into the challenges that they face to progress their careers, to be able to lobby the organisations that they've worked in for change, to help others to understand the rights that they are entitled to try and improve their experience at work. And really, the conversation is so inspiring and encouraging, because if you are thinking about what more it is you can do to create inclusive cultures, then they give you so much practical insights into what you can do, what they're doing, but also really give us that lived experience lens of what it feels like when you are trying to progress, when you are trying to advocate for change, and actually how the impact of what they've done has led to changes in policy, led to changes in service delivery. It's so inspiring. It's one of the reasons why I've been, you know, chasing them around, I feel like, for the past year to secure the date to record this today. Take a listen. Samantha is also a TEDx speaker, and we'll share the link in the show notes to her sharing more about her journey and story. But both of them, amazing women, amazing champions, amazingly brave women driving change and leading from the front. Hi, it is wonderful to have you both here with me on Bravery in the Boardroom today. Welcome. And it would be great if I could start with Adeshola. It would be great for our audience to know a little bit more about you and your role.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Adeshola Akanji. I'm currently working in the NHS as Outpatient Transformation and Efficiency Project Manager. I've been in the NHS for over 16 years. Also the group co-chair for the disability network BATS Ability at BATS Health NHS Trust. I do volunteer as a wellbeing champion, inclusion ambassador to ensure that we have equitable and fair recruitment process. And I also work as a disability advocate and consultant, empowering people to advocate for themselves with disability, raising more awareness of disability and supporting people to access the right support and resources they need to thrive. Mm-hmm. I'm a qualified mentor and workplace coach. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of mentoring and coaching work. And I gain a lot of inspiration from my own disabilities, mm-hmm. With someone with multiple long-term conditions and disabilities. Yes. So helping other people through my lived experience to empower them, to inspire them and motivate them as well to be their best and advocate for themselves.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. There's so many hats you wear, Adeshola, right? I know through our conversation today, you'll be sharing more and we'll be unpacking some of that, but because of all those hats you wear, is one of the primary reasons why I really wanted you to be here today and share more with us about all what you're doing. It's amazing. Before we go into it, it's absolutely amazing what you're doing. And I know you are already inspiring many, but we're going to get more into it.
Thank you.
And Sam, hi.
Hi, morning.
Ming, and I'm an inclusion manager and also the ED&I, so the Equity, Diversity and Inclusion business partner for one of our NHS trusts. I have over 20 years plus experience within the NHS, started in 2005 on a WorkWise programme as a volunteer.
Yes.
So I started on a 6-month placement, mm-hmm. and then I got a permanent role, applied for it, I was encouraged to apply for the role, became pregnant during that time, 9 months, so I was there for 2 days and mm-hmm. had to go off on maternity. But that's another story for another time. Then fast forward to 2014, I had career progression, so I applied for a new role within the laboratory. It was an increase in responsibilities, also pay, but then also opportunities for career growth with regards mm-hmm. to academic mm-hmm. studies. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe if we go on through the session, mm-hmm. I'll share a little bit more mm-hmm. about some neurodivergent
yeah.
and not having a good time in school and be very academic.
Yeah.
So that was a very point for me during yeah. my career journey. 2018, I became the co-chair of the Disability Network, similar to Adeshola. And that's when I started to grow and step into my own and embrace my difference as an individual, but then using that to advocate on behalf of other colleagues as well and helping to make those transformative change within the workplace with those who do have a disability.
Yeah.
Then I applied for the Stepping Up programme because I then got a secondment role as an inclusion officer. So then I moved from being clinical to admin and clerical in HR. And I attended the Stepping Up programme there as part of my development, personal development. 2022, I went onto the Brilliant Leadership programme. And I think it's quite key to share these poignant moments within my career journey, because that self-doubt that I had along the journey, but being able to step out of my comfort zone and apply for these programmes, and being the only person from my NHS Trust to be successful in getting onto the programmes. I've done 3D coaching as well in 2023, so we've been able to coach individuals, other neurodivergent individuals with different practices. 2024, I've been on the black boards, so that's about getting black people onto NHS boards and different types of boards, governing boards and stuff, getting us prepared and ready. And then I've just recently started a level 7 senior leadership apprenticeship. So I'm continuing to stretch myself, grow, you know, getting the depth and the breadth of everything. So that's my in a nutshell.
That's wonderful, Sam. And for those who aren't familiar, a couple of things for you to expand there for us. Stepping Up programme.
Yeah.
Tell me who that was for and what it entailed.
Yeah, so the Stepping Up programme was a positive action programme for individuals who are from the Black and Asian and minority ethnic groups. So it's about getting those individuals ready for the next level within their career journeys. And it had an ED&I thread throughout it. So that complemented the role that I was in at the time also.
And then the Brilliant Leaders Programme that you mentioned.
Yeah, the Brilliant Leaders Programme.
What a title.
Honestly. So that was a huge turning point for me, because during that period of time, I went on a self-discovery journey whereby I had to look within, unlearn a lot of the things that I learned about myself when I was younger. You know, that self-doubt, that not being able to accomplish and achieve many things. And that stems also from some of the experiences that I've had with certain managers during my career journey. But during that program, they gave me the tools. And you can't see it, but my invisible backpack, they're all in there. And from time to time, I need to delve into that backpack and take out those tools in order for me to continue to go and to continue to grow. So it was a very big turning point, because I actually implemented what I learned. So self-love, self-discovery, self-reflection, all of the self elements. And I
see you light up as you're talking about it. So I could see the, you know, almost feel the effect that it had on you by you, how you've lit up when you've been when you just spoke about it. So staying with you, like you said, you went on that journey of discovery for yourself and really developing your leadership and looking through that leadership lens. How would you describe your leadership style in 3 words now?
So for me, I'd say authentic, compassionate, and values led. So it's very important. And part of the Brilliant Leadership Programme, we looked at our values, our personal core values. And it's very important for me to hold those daily to the things that I'm doing. And also when supporting individuals around me, compassionate leadership, because I have been on the opposite receiving end where leadership hasn't been compassionate and it's been detrimental to my mental health and well-being. So it's very key once again for me to be compassionate to those around me and helping them to nurture them, but help them also to grow as well. And then the authenticity part of it, this is me.
What you see is what you get.
There you
right?
go.
Yeah.
So yeah, being authentic is very key for me, because you know that whole thing, that saying about bring your whole self to work. So in order for me to embrace my difference of being neurodiverse, having my long-term health conditions, it's part of who I am, you know. And I'll bring it to the table every day and show up.
You know, I smile so broadly, because you know, when we were talking off camera, I was saying to both of you, you know, how I've been chasing you almost, isn't it, to really find a way to so that you could be on the podcast, exactly for what you've both shared in what you opened up with, all what you're doing, to showcase it, to shine a light on it. But it's, I feel inspired just even by hearing, you know, the first 5 minutes of speaking to you. But underlying and underpinning that is what you just said there, Sam. I've spoken to you a number of times now, and authentic is what would come to the, you know, one, if someone said to me, how would you describe Sam? You know, one of the first words I'd say is authentic. And one of the second things I would say is compassionate, because whenever you speak about yourself, you always speak about others. And you always speak about the impact you want to have on others.
Yeah.
Creating space for others, you know, and to hear you talk about how you had that turning point on the Brilliant Leaders Journey and program is just amazing. But I absolutely know from those who know you, okay, and from me just getting to know you, those three words that you described absolutely ring true. They really do. They really do. So Adeshola, like you said, you're advocating, you're chairing groups as well. How would you describe your leadership style in three words?
I would say for me, it's empathetic leadership because I put myself in other people's shoes. Mm-hmm. Having gone through my life from starting from admin, you know, level, gone through research, supervisory role, and, you know, over the years in the NHS. And for me as well, being someone that's gone through bullying and harassment mm-hmm. at work. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things mm-hmm. that impacted on my health and well-being.
Yeah.
I had to be signed off sick from work. So I know what it's like for staff members that are facing stressful situations.
Yes.
And I try as well to lead by being a role model, mm-hmm. situational leadership in helping other people understand where they're coming from. An example is a member of staff that was signed off because they lost their parents, and the next thing the manager was saying, no, they're not giving them more time. And mm-hmm. I said, no, I'm speaking to HR, we're getting this done.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's about empowering other people, being a role model for them, helping them to thrive and be their best. Because mm-hmm. of my experience, mm-hmm. Living with disability, also facing the bullying and harassment and other things that have been at work. And career journey has been very difficult mm-hmm. for me. So that's one of the things as well that impacted my leadership style.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to be a pace setter,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
pace mm-hmm. the leadership, mm-hmm. which has helped me in the way that I've been able to coach and mentor people as well, encouraging them as well to strive higher.
Yes.
And some of the things is encouraging them as well to be part of the network, especially those yeah. going through long-term health conditions and disability. Yeah. So I've yeah. got some of my mentors now, some of them are volunteers as well,
yeah.
followed my step to be yeah. a site lead for the disability network,
mm-hmm.
and then helping them as well to look towards their career progression. I've coached people to go for career progression because I know how difficult it is, especially from the black and minority ethnic
yeah.
Background. So those are my leaderships that I always strive to be empathetic, be a pace setter, and mm-hmm. also a role model for
mm-hmm.
others.
Mm-hmm. And so talking about, you touched on there your career journey and sort of that being challenging and having that horrible experience of bullying and harassment. What helped you? So what's helped you to get to where you are now? What's helped you to have the confidence and bravery as well that you have now in the roles that you're picking up?
What's helped me to have confidence is understanding that it's not my fault. And sometimes we look and think, is there something we're doing wrong?
Yes.
Because of the imposter syndrome and thinking, am I not doing well at work?
Yes.
But what I discovered is rediscovering my own strength
mm-hmm.
and building on my own strength, knowing I'm capable, I was high achieving, and all my, you know, every time I do appraisals is always, you know, very high achieving.
Mm-hmm.
And that says that, no, it wasn't something wrong with me. Again, looking for every way to find joy within myself and with other people as well. So I started volunteering, doing some volunteering work to support other people. So not focusing on myself,
yeah.
But focusing on other people. What can I do to make a change and make positive impact? And one of it is starting as a well-being champion, looking at how can I support my team as a whole. And one of the things was looking at the low cardiovascular
mm-hmm.
Health check program, free health check for the whole department, which amazing overbooked. And then looking at other areas as what can support our staff members in terms of the disability. I was introduced by my mentor to the mm-hmm. disability network,
mm-hmm.
and I've been using that as well to help people with long-term conditions and disability finding joy as well at work, because a lot of people lose their sense of joy when they're going through a lot of difficulties or
yeah.
caring for people with disability.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
for me, looking at my, I started developing that passion. And I think one of the also things that came to me, one of the words I'll always remember, is when I was in ICU in 2022
mm-hmm.
Due to a surgery. It was meant to be a routine surgery mm-hmm. and ended up in ICU. My mom said to me, don't let anything stress you out, because you almost died. I was the one that was there and saw the things that happened and saw you almost helpless. I could have lost you.
Yes.
That impacted me positively, because I said to myself, I'm not letting the work environment, toxic work environment, stress me out. I need to make a change. And I look at how do I channel that energy. And for me, it's helping other people. What more can you do? Making a positive impact, significant positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
So every day I look for new ways to make positive impact in the lives of other people.
So really taking your adversity and some of those real deep challenges, difficult challenges that you're experiencing, but you're sharing with us, hey, how it's fueled you to help people even more. That's just, it's so inspiring, I think. And, you know, and I don't say that lightly. I mean, genuinely inspiring about how you've done that. I'm going to come back to you about some of the particular advocacy that you do. But Sam, you touched on some of the challenges that you've experienced, you know, talking about you're neurodivergent, your experience at school, some of the managers that you had. What other challenges have shown up on the way for you in your journey so far?
Okay, so one that comes to mind, and I would say even more recent resurface. So a lot of the trauma that I've had growing up during school years as shared, and also like with the managers, certain managers in the past, some of their mannerisms and the way they go about doing things. It's almost like there's a connection with certain situations that's happening, like daily events. And it almost like pulls me back to where I was. So the challenges of being told, okay, we don't want you to do this, but there's no reason why they don't want you to do it. And then you start questioning, okay, so, you know, well, what is the reasons? But now learning how to overcome those challenges by going and have those conversations. Another scenario, being told that there's psychological safety. But on the adverse side of it, because I'm neurodivergent, sometimes I just say things and it doesn't connect with what, so what I say doesn't connect with what I'm actually thinking.
Yes.
So then when the other person's receiving it, they're not receiving it as to how I mean it to come out.
Yes.
Psychological safety. Okay. Well, what did you actually mean then? Because what you said is not, and then I have to go and explain myself. So the challenges of not people understanding what it is I'm trying to articulate and then taking it in the wrong way, wrong mannerism, that's quite challenging, because then I've had to relearn how to actually communicate and pause and think, you know, and reflect also with regards to the conversations that I've had.
When you speak, when you've shared with us here, like you said about your neurodivergent needs, recognizing, you've recognized the impact that that can have on you and have on situations, I suppose is what I describe, but also talking about, if I could describe it as triggering. So some of the things that you're experiencing, you know, now or more recently, triggering the memory of when you've experienced it before. Thank you for your honesty in sharing that, because I think when we talk about, when we talk about some of the barriers that if you are underrepresented or you have additional needs, it's not to do with your capability, right? And I think that's the point I really want to come out of. It's not to do with capability. It's to do with those additional needs that you may need support with and that you need seniors to understand.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's really important. Diversity does not equal lesser.
No.
Right. It's really important we speak about that, because quite often when people talk about, well, why do you need something like the Stepping Up program? Why do you need a career accelerator for people who are underrepresented? It's because they face more equity barriers. Right. So the route to progression is harder.
Yes.
Right. You add in your intersectionalities, that throws another layer on top of it as well. And then if you're trying to self-advocate in those situations as well, the additional dynamic of that. So it's really important we unpack that, right? Because because I said so, right? And anyone with autonomy or power who is listening to this, my biggest hate is people who abuse their power. Okay. And one of the easiest ways, and anyone who's a parent, is quite, that's quite a common phrase, isn't it? Because I said so. One of my big values is mutual respect. And I think everyone deserves an explanation to the rationale. And if there isn't one, you have to stand up and admit that there isn't one. I just don't like the sound of it, right? If that's what it is, to say it. But actually, everyone has the right for the rationale to be explained. Because if it's just a blocker, why is that?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you were sort of saying there, isn't it? Why is that?
Yeah.
There's a reason, let's talk about it. But if not, why is that? So, picking up on from the point I was asking about challenges, you mentioned the Brilliant Leaders Program. Is there anything else you'd want to share that's helped you to, and before I forget, right, before I forget, I wanted you to tell us more about your EDI business partner role, because I know that that role doesn't, that's not a common role or role title that we hear in the NHS.
Yeah, yeah. So within our NHS trust, what they've done is they've done like a restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
So we, the inclusion managers, they each have a site that they have to oversee, and mine one, I've got an additional role, which is the ED&I business partner. So I oversee one site which has no ED&I people there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
just me and plus our HR colleagues who will be running the shows, if you so call
mm-hmm.
it that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a big challenge because they've never had anyone there in the past, whereas the other sites, they do have people there and they've got their own little teams.
Yes.
So it is a challenge to go in there and actually make that change, transformative change. But then also, you know, the cultural part element with regards to the colleagues that are there, like welcoming me and being open to what's going to be brought to the table. So yes, so it's a new role. Yeah, it's going to be challenging.
Yes.
But I love a challenge.
Okay, so I think it's definitely, we'd love to hear more about it, so maybe kind of hearing an update from you in 6 months of how that's going. And I'm sure other NHS colleagues listening would also be intrigued to know how, because people mostly be familiar with the business partner model, right?
Yeah.
For finance, for HR,
yes,
right? So it's interesting to see how taking that approach with EDI as well, does that help with, like you said, maybe getting that spread and balance across the organisation and keeping the focus.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what happens. So wish you every success.
Thank you. Right. And I would love to come back. And just on that point as well, so I still do my main role as the inclusion manager, which is group led. So feeding into our inclusion strategy, but then also filtering it out to the site to ensure, because every site's got different challenges and what areas that they need to work on from the data. So making sure that everything's aligned, so our people plan, the group operational plan, and then the inclusion plan for the site aligns into the wider, bigger picture.
That's really helpful to explain that, because not everybody will be familiar with the group model. You know, Barts is one of the largest trusts, NHS trusts in the country, isn't it? With a number of hospital sites. So when you both are referring to sites, a number of hospital sites operating under the Barts banner. So when you're talking about the group, you're talking about the strategy and the decisions that are for all the hospital sites, and then your EDI business partner role relates to one hospital site in particular. Thank you. So Adeshola, I wanted to come back to you, and you started to touch on how you're using your voice. You mentioned a number of different hats that you wear at the beginning. I'd really like to hear a little bit more from you about how you are using your voice and influence to advocate for people with disabilities.
Yeah, so as part of my role as disability co-chair, the group co-chair for the trust, one of the first and most important is, what are we doing to make sure that our staff members feel that they belong in a place that inclusive culture? Do they feel that they belong? Are they having support from their managers? Are the managers trained? Are they disability aware? And one of the things I discovered, especially when I started a site role, was there's little to no awareness, knowledge among our managers. A lot of them don't have any idea how to manage people with disability. And that way, a lot of staff members have been denied a reasonable adjustment they needed. Also in terms of cost, because a lot of them feel that the reasonable adjustment comes out from their budget. And that was impacting the staff members being denied a reasonable adjustment or workplace adjustments they needed to thrive at work. So looking at the budget we've got, because the Bat Health has got a centralised budget, they're trying to re-educate people to understand staff members can access the reasonable adjustment funding to be able to get the support they need.
Yes.
And also helping more people to know and be more aware of the access to work support, which is available, but a lot of people didn't know. I only found it as well through research, so I can understand. So I do a lot of research that other people don't really have to, but still have to. Part of it is just helping them as well to be able to access that support they needed at work. And one of the conversations as well with the group co-chair is getting more senior leadership involvement in a lot of our events, because we don't seem to have a lot of senior leadership. And that's when I go to group boards. I bring that up and say, can they also show that they're supporting disability and getting them to be allies as well? Because one of the things when I went in and said, well, no one is wearing a sunflower lanyard as allies. I said, so why is that? You know, we need more supporters. And then that's Royal London Hospital in their board. Hospital board, and the chief executive said, where do we get them? And then we can start all wearing the ensuring that we're allies. Another way that I've been letting my voice heard, I've been able to present in the group executive board, the hospital executive board, and the equality, diversity and inclusion boards as well, to show more awareness of disability, to let them know what staff are going through, to know areas of focus for our staff members, especially in recruitment, also in terms of reasonable adjustment. That's always been a major part of why a lot of our staff members are going off sick, because they're not getting the right support, to minimize sickness absences. I've been able to share my stories or my experiences in Schwartz Round, which has been amazing and has enabled me to gain trust, especially one of my colleagues that attended. So she was able to trust in me and be able to talk to me about the things that she was going through, and I could support her as a result. I've also had the privilege of presenting in different other networks, disability networks, and different other boards, read an organisation, to get them more aware of disability. And within my organisation, one of the amazing things we've been able to achieve is having a disability policy. As a trust, there's a big trust, Bat Health NHS Trust, you think we'll have a disability policy. Unfortunately, when it merged with the hospitals, there wasn't one. So we were so privileged that we've been able to draft one now. We've been able to also present a reasonable adjustment. We do go between reasonable adjustment or workplace adjustment, as people, whichever people prefer, SOP, standard operating procedure, to help managers as well to know the process to be able to get staff members the access and reasonable adjustment they need. And one of the big areas as well that I've been involved is the disability podcast. And thank you for the suggestion of a podcast, because when I spoke to you previously, you suggested, why don't you start your own podcast? And I took that on board, spoke to my network, and I just thought, that's amazing. So I started hosting a disability podcast, which we call Batability Podcast, and interview people from senior level and different other levels across the organization, different roles, the union, and well-being as well, just to get more people to be more aware of disability, understand how to support their own health and well-being, understanding the union, the guardian service, and the rest of it. And one of the major achievements for me is also looking at our impact at the eating disorder service. Because as someone with an eating disorder, looking and having someone with autism, because I got diagnosed last year, less than a year now, with autism and ADHD, and this year with dyslexia. So with someone with autism, we have a different eating pattern. But that wasn't put into factor, because it's a tick box exercise. And I was able to have that conversation with the service, the eating disorder service, a big eating disorder organization here in London, and have that conversation with them. And that impacted change. First, they had their therapists have training. Secondly, they change the treatment pathway, considering people with autistic, and my treatment was adapted as well to suit that. So for me, that's a big achievement. Massive to be able to impact a lot of other people now with the autistic and the eating disorder service. And I think for me, it's always, as a public speaker now, I started doing public speaking, I'm very introverted, I didn't remember to mention, very introverted. So me doing public speaking now, and meeting with different organisations, talking to them, being part of different networks to help women, especially as a black woman. So we are so underrepresented, and also getting involved in research. I started getting involved in a lot of research now, and I think fantastic, because so that's the way I've been using my voice and helping other people to advocate for themselves. And I say, you have to advocate for yourself, even with your doctors, even at work with your managers. If you're not telling your managers the things you're struggling with, they will not be able to put things in place to support your work, the challenges. You don't have to tell them your medical conditions, but you should be able to talk to them about the challenges that you're facing and put in a positive light to help them to see that you're doing your best to make sure you're thriving and being your best at work. And, you know, you want to be your best at work. So you just need those reasonable adjustments to help you to achieve that. So that's been amazing.
Really, really powerful what you shared in relation to starting with the, you know, individual colleagues, like you said, how you're helping them to understand what's available to them, isn't it? And to what you explained there at the end is a really, really important point there, isn't it? About you don't have to disclose your medical conditions to be able to have the conversation with your manager about the support needs that you may have, right? Really important to do, because that will, a lot of the time people won't have the conversation because of that. But hearing to, you know, supporting individuals and encouraging individuals, but then having that policy, So like you said, having the policy, helping people to understand what's already available across the organisation, and then coming all the way across from that, and then trying to use the podcast platform to widen reach and to share more with a wider group of people, right? So really coming at your, using your voice and on all levels, individual, you know, organisation, and then almost podcasts can be global, right? Podcasts can be global. Definitely. But really heard what you said there as well about the intersectionality of being a Black woman with a range of long-term conditions and disabilities, and even having some new diagnoses. Thank you for being honest and letting us know that, but having your new diagnosis as well, but also impacting on the services that patients receive, right? So as a healthcare user yourself, you've also been able to galvanize change in the services as well. So absolutely amazing, isn't it? And just, I spoke to you both about, you know, why I asked you to come on here, because I'm not asking, you're uniquely yourselves, right? I'm not asking anybody to be you, but what I absolutely know is people can be inspired by what you're doing, but also learn, you know, is there something here that I could do? You know, is there something here that I could do in my local organization? Could I have that conversation? Can I find out? If you don't know, isn't it? Do we have a disability policy? Do I know, you know, how is my manager disability aware? So there's just even some questions that people could take from this conversation today to ask, isn't it, as a starting point, even if they don't want to. I know we have listeners who want to do more. Yeah. Okay. And but they're thinking about how. So there are some listening. But what I think is also great in what you've shared is actually if you want to advocate for yourself, here are some questions you can ask. Here are some things that you can do. So thank you so much for unpacking that.
Sorry, Monique, just on that point. So the first, well, one tip I'd love to give everybody who's listening with regards to self-advocacy, the first thing you need to do is go and read the policies, please.
Mm-hmm.
Can't stress that enough.
So if there are policies, familiarise yourself with them.
Yes, yeah. Get to know the policies. So then if you are called into a meeting, as you said, you know what to expect when you're going in there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got it in your back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very key with regards to especially the self-advocacy part of it. Mm-hmm. Know the policies, know what the procedures are. You touched on SOPs, yeah. Know what SOPs are available, know what support is available. Yeah. And then also just sitting back and doing that self-reflection, what is it that you need as an individual to help you strive and thrive within the workplace?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just a little tip there.
Really, again, really helpful. So really here listening to, this is what you can do for yourself as these first steps, yeah, to kind of, like you said, understand what's available to you, understand what should be available to you as well, isn't it? Because I think policies are documents.
Yeah,
they don't always come to life or are implemented in the way that they should, but they are a helpful starting point if they are in place.
Yeah.
And just to at the back of that as well, and it's true, because what I started doing as well is researching a lot of the policies.
Yes.
Especially when I started with myself, is finding out the policies and even telling HR was in the policies. There's sometimes they come back to you with something, you think, no, this doesn't sound right. And then send a screenshot of the policy and say, yeah. And then sometimes even the managers don't know. They might say, oh, let me speak to HR, come back 3 weeks later, and the same screenshot that I sent to the manager. Mm-hmm, and I'm thinking, okay. So that was a start. Again, learning through other people's lived experience, I think, is powerful. So that's why it's important to learn through other people's lived experience. It's so important and crucial to talk about what we're going through, because that's a learning point. And that's why a lot of people resonate better when you tell them about your experience and pull from your experience as well, how you've been able to manage at work, what are the challenges. I had challenges getting the reasonable adjustment I needed. I had to advocate for myself to get that as well.
Yeah.
And supporting people through that advocacy journey to know that they will face challenges and barriers, but don't let that stop them or impact on them being able to make those changes or being able to have those difficult conversations.
Yeah,
still have those difficult conversations. If you don't get the answer, do more research, find out from more people, and then being able to use that. And networking is powerful. Looking at networking, that's why I'm part of a lot of networks, international and national networks. Through that, I've been able to learn a lot as well.
Yes.
And that way, it makes me more empowered to be able to face the board and be able to say, oh, well, yes, it happened so and so and so in so many areas. How can we do that as well, make those positive changes and impact and improvement plans and the lives of our colleagues?
Yes, and listening to Sam, you mentioned earlier about your backpack. Mm-hmm. And tools in your backpack. And I think Adeshola, hearing you here, you're almost talking about how you've built up through your network, through the different groups you're involved in, through educating yourself, through the policy. It's almost like you've got a tool with backpacks in it as well. And I think what you're talking about here is sharing with colleagues. You can start to build your backpack. Here's some tips and tricks we'd give you about the right tools to try and get into your backpack to help yourself, right? To help yourself, but to access the help that your organisation should be providing as well. I think that's what I'm hearing from you both, isn't it? Yeah. Self-advocate, but self-advocate to access the support that should be available to you. Yeah, and if it's not available, here's what else you can do. Yeah, really, really helpful. Sam, I wanted to come back to you and pick up on leadership. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know you're an aspiring senior leader, and I'm very convinced that I will see you in a boardroom sometime in the future for sure, right? But as an aspiring leader who is underrepresented, you know, senior leader who's underrepresented, what do you think should be prioritised to increase representation at senior level?
So I think there needs to be a lot more done around succession planning, so growing our own within the organisations, because there's a lot of talk with regards to you don't have that knowledge or you don't have those skills to in order to be able to go into the next role. We know we have the qualifications, as long as our arms. So therefore, why not give those individuals those opportunities and getting them ready for those roles? So succession planning, first thing, and then the second thing, sponsorship. So having those sponsors across the organizations at the senior leadership to be able to speak about those people who are not in the room when there's opportunities coming up, to be able to connect those individuals. So succession planning and sponsorship, two big key things. And then I think another thing on the flip side of that for the individuals is doing that gap analysis. So if you've been going for these job interviews and you're not getting the jobs, you're being shortlisted, you're going, you're sitting having the interviews, but they say you don't have enough experience. Do a gap analysis. What is the experience you're looking for? Go and ask them if you can do some work experience there for a day, shadowing. You know, go on that course. If you need to go on a course, I'm sure you wouldn't need to because you've got, but if you manage to be able to fill that gap, next time you go, you can say, well, I've got this, 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 and this. Is that really what is missing? Because then that also puts you at ease as well to know that you've done your due diligence when going for those roles.
No, really hear that. And I know succession planning is a really big ticket in terms of if we want to see diversity in leadership increase and be sustained. Right, succession planning gives you both of those in one go, and more now we're seeing sponsorship being, you know, a key career development tool. Now I think before we always heard coaching, mentoring. I think sponsorship is really playing into that space now, particularly around supporting colleagues who are underrepresented. So thank you for that. What would you say, so I'm staying with you, Sam, a minute, what would you say though, so anyone listening who doesn't feel as brave as you two, right? Because so, excuse the pun, but honestly, the bravery that you both have shown, the bravery that you've used, I think as well, into to take up the roles that you have, both your formal roles and your additional roles that you're fulfilling. What would you say to someone who doesn't feel brave enough to put themselves forward for new opportunity?
And it is, don't let the fear of failure stop you from moving forward. Take the lessons learned and make a new path. I use that as a measure for me to know that I'm on the right trajectory. Some people may be sitting there thinking, oh, what does she mean by
and
that?
And it's a tell us more.
Yeah. So if I'm not on the right path and I'm not doing right, so for example, the role that I'm in now, I didn't get into this role by chance. I see it as it was a part of my path. Because as I said, I started working in the lab. And because I experienced something similar to Adeshola, bullying and harassment, then I started to get involved within the ED&I side stuff and the disability network. And it's from there where I started to excel. And I said, I have a different purpose. And I was guided to as to where I am now. So I use it as a measure with the challenges that's coming up to say, yes, I'm on the right path. If I don't have any challenges that I'm experienced of facing, I'm cruising. And I'm thinking, okay, things are going okay at the moment, but something else is big is coming. So I use it as a measure. But yeah, don't let the fear of failure stop you from moving forward.
That's a powerful statement there, right? It's a powerful statement. And your testimony to the statement that you're making there, isn't it? So it's not just kind of words on the page.
Yeah.
I think what you've been through and what you've shared with us today is a real testimony to that, and you continue to strive forward as well. So thank you for sharing that. So I'm going to ask you this question then. We hear all of that, all what you're doing, or what you're striving for, the stretch that you're pushing for all the time. How do you maintain your balance and your well-being?
No, that's a big question, because it's very key for me. So I do journaling, a lot of journaling, reflection journaling, because there's things that happen, and at the reverse time in the moment, before how I would have responded and reacted to it, I would have lived up to, you know, a lot of those stereotypes that people get labelled. But now I reflect, I write it down, and then I sit and then I will go over it and pick it apart. So journaling. Then another thing I like to do is grounding, and grounding by just spiritual meditation. You know, breathing and being, which is a big key one. You know, people don't understand how powerful that is.
My goodness.
Just be, you know. So doing that a lot, breathing and being. And then also my granddaughter.
How old is she?
She is 11 months. So she brings me a lot of joy and happiness, because I've got two sons. So she's my little girl. But being around her, playing with her, and seeing how she's growing as well and developing. So something that I didn't touch on earlier, which I said is for maybe for another podcast, is the experience I had during my time where I experienced bullying and harassment, and having my son when going into my new role, and experiencing postnatal depression amongst everything else that I had, and not having that connection, that bond. So being able to bond with my granddaughter is almost like I'm making up time for back then. And then also my invisible backpack. Part of my well-being, part of it, digging into there, because I've had therapy, and I took away some really good time as well. So allocating time, because I used to do a lot of worrying, allocating that time where, you know, that's the time if I have any worries, I can sit and worry about it there. But then after that time, you leave it parked.
It's finished.
So yes, having practical tools.
Family time with your granddaughter, joy, right? Joy in that time. Journaling as well, and grounding, and what you were saying there, really, with that breathing, you can do that at any moment, right? So I talk about the reason why I just went over that as well is because it's a very challenging time in the NHS right now, you know, and I know you're both in the thick of that. So noting a lot of our colleagues who are listening are, you know, like yourselves, holding roles in the NHS. So just that reminder, I think it's always important to speak to colleagues like yourself who are leading the way. You know, how are you getting that balance? What are the things that are working for you? So Adeshola, if I ask you the same question, how are you maintaining balance wearing the number of hats that you do?
For me, I think first of all, I've learned to you know, understand and acknowledge my limits, because I'm not superwoman. You know, we're human first of all, and also looking at strategies to help me manage my time more effectively. Crucial tools for me, because especially having multiple long-term conditions and disabilities, and now also with the neurodiverse side of things, I have to learn to manage my time more effectively. I'm looking at what is not working out for my for me at that point. An example was, I was meant to go on a pageant, you know, participate in a pageant over the last weekend, and I just looking at the fibromyalgia is not helping, chronic fatigue not helping. I think I'm with legs and pain. How am I going to can't walk down the so that got cancelled. So it's just you know, understanding and taking regular breaks. I know people find it difficult, especially if you have ADHD like me. Sometimes you're glued to your computer, but even if it's reminders, giving yourself those phone reminders to say, get up, have just a short break, just a bit of a walk around. I have to remind myself several alarms on my phone. Also looking at doing things that you enjoy. And I know that it sometimes can be difficult, especially when you have mental health issues, as you've mentioned, being therapies, looking for something you enjoy, because sometimes you don't find joy in many things anymore. So you have to still look at what you enjoy. And one of the things I do is I love photo shoots. I just had one last Friday, which is amazing. And I'm watching funny shows. And it might not seem like much, but when I get home, I sit down, Netflix is my, I sit down, watch nice Korean dramas. So it's been amazing. Also seeking advice and support where needed. I think sometimes, especially with mental health, a lot of people, especially men, don't want to seek advice or talk about it. But we need to, you know, remove those stigmas and barriers to mental health. mm-hmm. seek advice, seek support, talk mm-hmm. to other people as well, and mm-hmm. they can give you, you know, you can share tips of what's worked for you.
Yes.
Not everything will work for someone else because yeah. we all have individual needs.
Yeah.
And we all react to things differently. We all need different support channels and strategies. But learning from other people can just be a place to start. And then just looking at continuous learning for me, I love doing research. Yeah. It's powerful because that's what's helped me to be able to advocate for myself and for others. Mm-hmm. So I spend my time doing research. Sometimes when I'm working and listening to a webinar, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. there, learning new mm-hmm. things. So I think, but most importantly, giving back to others. That's mm-hmm. been something that's given me joy.
Yes.
I have some friends I've developed as well that, you know, we meet almost every weekend on Saturdays. Now they're more older than I am. But we've loved that experience, that sharing, that spending mm-hmm. time together and mm-hmm. supporting one another because mm-hmm. they're widows. So doing things even outside work as well to encourage sure. I'm going through a lot, but still they're going through a lot as well. And we support, we have that interchange of encouragement. And at work as well, looking for ways to make impact in supporting other people. What is it I can do? What else can I do mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. Help more people to get the support they need at work? So I would not stress it enough, giving mm-hmm. back to others, no matter how small. And I always say this, no matter how small you think the impact is, mm-hmm. no matter how insignificant you think it is, it's making a difference in someone's life. And you don't know it 5 years down the line, they could still remember it.
Yeah.
And to sum it up for me, I always reflect on my signature phrase, and I always say this, mm-hmm. my disability is not a reflection of my worth. Rather, I light my authenticity and individuality. Mm-hmm. So it helps me to keep going because I'm showing my authentic self. I am a woman, a black woman, introverted black woman with multiple disabilities and long-term health conditions. But life goes on and we have to do the best as well for ourselves. And I have a son as well. So I have to think about him and do the best I can to help myself and maintain my health and well-being mm-hmm. because I don't even have any family in the country. It's mm-hmm. just me and my son. So I have mm-hmm. to think about that as well.
Mm-hmm. So important what you shared there and the range of the different things that you are doing, different things that you can do, different things that are helping you, and just so honest, I think, from both of you today. What a refreshing discussion. I don't want to call it a conversation, it's a discussion. What a refreshing discussion, but really helped, I hope, helped me, but help our listeners to understand the challenges of, you know, the intersectionalities that you have and navigating work with that, but also heard from you really clearly what's helped you to overcome the barriers and blockers that you have, where your bravery and energy, because there's something about the energies, where your bravery and energy comes from to help others, but finishing on a really important space, how you both look for balance and try to protect your well-being from your past experience, but also really leading by example, I think, in this space and what you're trying to do. So if our listeners want to hear more from you or connect with you, what's the best place for them to do that? So Sam, I'll ask you first.
So for me, it would be on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So my LinkedIn is just Samantha Ming.
Yeah.
So you can find me there.
Okay, and Adeshola.
I would say as well, LinkedIn is always the best way. Adeshola Konji, I don't know the full, but if you search for me, you'll find me.
Yeah, so what we'll do is make sure in the show notes, we'll put the link to both your LinkedIns. And there's quite a few things that you both mentioned in the conversation today. So if there is anything else that you'd like us to put the links in for our listeners, we'll add that as well. But most importantly, thank you so much for your time, contribution and the expertise that you shared with us today. I think you're both extremely inspiring, but also informative in what you shared here to raise awareness of people living and working with disabilities. What we can do if you're in leadership roles. So what can you do to support colleagues in the organization? Also, if you are someone who is trying to improve, you know, work and your experience at work, what are some of the things you can do to self-advocate as well? So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.